Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, CJSF.ca, streaming worldwide. Today, you're going to take a journey to cross the summer solstice, and we're going to be thinking about how did the longer days affect you as a child, differently as a youth, and now at whatever age. Good afternoon and welcome to Powered by Age, Canada's longest running senior-led podcast. I'm Charlotte Farrell, your host, and today our topic is Welcome to the Smooth Summer Solstice. We're going to be talking about what are the things that you remember from the solstice of the longer summer days in your childhood, in your youth, and now as an older adult. And we're also going to hear some poetry and essays related to things happening in June. So I'm, without further ado, I'm going to say I acknowledge that our podcast takes place on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. We are supportive of the things that are being done to reconcile our uninvited invitation to live here. So now I'm going to have our two of our intrepid podcast Zoomsters introduce themselves, and after their introduction, each will have something that they're sharing, and then I'll come back to you with something I'm sharing. Okay, Neil?
Yeah, hi, my name is Neil Ryan. I'm a senior poet. Those are separate. I'm a senior and I'm a poet, and I have a book called From the Other Side, which shares my spirit. My identity is that I'm a human being having a spiritual experience called life. So, Leslie, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Neil. I'm Leslie Hebert, and I live in New Westminster. And I write poetry and short stories and travel memoirs. And I am going to share some summer solstice memories today.
Okay. And I am also a poet, and I know it. And there's a way that I have combined using poetry with doing eliciting poems for people that are working through substance abuse recovery, people who are using poetry for peace and love purposes, and using poetry to transfer from written form to audiobooks to films. And I have the honor and happiness of having had my new poem, I Choose to Challenge, which is a video poem with music, now into a short film. And it was screened last week at the Polygon Gallery, and I'm going to be having some screenings along with the workshop that I'll be announcing to you in the future. So Neil has something, you know, another thing that happened during June was the Juneteenth holiday, and not many people knew about it until it got designated as a federal holiday, but there are a lot of issues that remain. So Neil has something that he's going to share related to that.
Okay. I have a lot of feelings about this because I look at what's going on in the U.S. right now, and there is chaos. And I imagined what it would be like when the freedom was acclaimed during Lincoln's time. And why there is this holiday in the U.S. So this is written by Heather Cox Richardson. I get it through a friend of mine who gets the letter called American. And this was written last Sunday, and I really would like to share this with you as an example of the insanity that must have been like. So Heather writes, Tomorrow is the federal holiday honoring Juneteenth, the celebration of the announcement on June the 19th, 1865, in Texas, that enslaved Americans were free. On April the 9th, on 1865, General Robert E. Lee had surrendered the Army of Northern Virginia to General Ulysses S. Grant of the U.S. Army. But it was not until June the 2nd that General Edmund Kirby Smith surrendered the Confederacy Trans-Mississippi Department, the last major army of the Confederacy, to the United States in Galveston, Texas. Smith then fled to Mexico. 17 days later, 17 days later, General Gordon Granger of the U.S. Army arrived on Galveston Island with about 2,000 U.S. troops. On June the 19th, Granger issued General Order Number 3 informing the former enslaved inhabitants of Texas that they were free. He quotes, "The people of Texas are informed, in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free." It read, "This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing becomes them becomes that between employee and hired employer." The order went, "The freemen are advised to remain quiet at their present homes and work for wages. They are informed that they will not be allowed to collect at military posts, and they will not be supported in idleness, either there or elsewhere." General Order Number 3 informed former enslaved people that they were freed from enslavement and the suffocating circumstances of their lives. Restricted movements, corporal punishment, and stunted lives to which American system of human slavery had previously confined them. It urged them to join the free labor market economy and that the North had championed, working for wages and seamlessly shifting from their former relationships with the enslavers to ones of employee and employer. This news arrived in a state consumed by chaos. During the war, white men had gone east to join the Confederate armies as planters had rushed west from Louisiana with their enslaved people to try and preserve the institution of slavery. Mexicans and Comanches had launched raids against the unsettled population, and the Longhorn cattle bottled up in Texas as the United States blockaded southern ports and the railroad lines degraded had multiplied until observers estimated that there were 8 cattle for every 1 person in Texas. And the animals threatened those that ventured too close to them. The fall of Confederacy meant the collapse of whatever order remained in the state. The former Confederates were demoralized and angry. It looked like everything worth living for was gone. Cattleman Charles Goodnight later recalled, "Planters, furious at the death of their cause and desperate to get crops in, refused to tell the enslaved people in the field of the dramatic change of their circumstances with the surrender of the last major Confederate army." Against this backdrop, Granger's men read Order Number 3 to formerly enslaved Texans in Galveston. They heard the news and celebrated in the streets. The order was no magic bullet for the state on far-flung plantations. Some enslavers tried to hold enslaved people at work until after the harvest. But the news of freedom on June the 19th provided a focus and a rallying point for Black Americans to celebrate freedom that stood out and apart from the chaos and anger around them. A year later, the 13th Amendment abolished slavery, except as punishment for a crime had been added to the U.S. Constitution. And in June the 19th, 1866, Texas freed people gathered to celebrate the coming of their freedom with prayers, speeches, food, and socializing. By the following year, the federal government encouraged Juneteenth celebrations, eager to make sure Black citizens had an opportunity to discuss their voting rights that had been put in place by the Military Reconstruction Act of 1867. And the traditional Juneteenth began to spread to Black communities across the nation. Beginning there in Texas, Black Americans celebrated Juneteenth, emphasizing that emancipation in the United States meant not just freedom from enslavement, but freedom to shape the nation's future. That chaos must have been incredible, just incredible. And I say good for us all that in fact that the Americans and under Lincoln decided this was not the right thing. This was against humanity. So bless us all. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, I remember reading years and years and years ago that American politics is not divided into left and right, but is divided into north and south.
Yeah.
And even more than North and South, Black and white, because there are northern states or northern senators who have joined in this act of voting, changing, overturning voter rights in a number of parts of the South. But part of the chaos are things that they haven't stressed so much is that slavery didn't end in the United States until the people in Texas were notified, because as you were reading in that essay, there were people from the bordering states who marched their captive people down into Texas because Texas wasn't honoring. Some people have made this story. It took 2 years for the news to get across there. It took 2 years for a horseman. People crossed the country in months, you know, some of these runners and whatnot. But Texas just acted like, you know, refused to accept that slavery had been ended, that there had been an ending by Lincoln 2 years before, and they just maintained it. And some people were coming up as far as Canada. There are stories of people who came up into Canada to capture free people and take them to Texas because Texas was still ignoring the order, ignoring the proclamation of freedom. So there was one account that I read in a Southern paper that when it was announced, people ran out into all the neighboring counties establishing churches and looking for their families. So among the myths that have been perpetrated about the Black family is that, they didn't care about each other, but their stories, you know, Sojourner Truth was one of the people searching for their children, men and fathers searching for children that had been sold into slavery and starting churches, starting businesses. And they also started a process, a thing with money that's people would come for a meeting and they would put in a little bit of money to be divided. So people would keep continuing and then it would be this person's turn to receive money and another person's turn to receive money, because there was a lot of fighting that happened around some of the money that was supposed to be made available for people to get jobs or people to get housing. Can you imagine you've worked for somebody for all of your life and then you're freed and there's nothing saying, well, here's your wages or here's money that we owe you for this. People being freed with nothing. So a lot of people still ended up as sharecroppers, meaning you had your house, but you had to pay. So sometimes before people could even have money to for their family, they'd taken out money for the lodging, money for their clothes, money for everything. So people were still in a slave-like condition because they had no money of their own, no compensation, which that's, is a that, little that, thing.
That's the different. Chaos that I'm talking yeah, about.
Right.
And it still exists to some extent. I've been through the southern states doing research, and it's still the white against the black, and it's against the north.
Well, it really people perpetrating it. I mean, what happened with now all of this hate speech and meanness, the former person occupying the White House perpetrated a lot of hate speech, people just really taking issues and people feeling that it was a threat when more senators were elected, when the senators were elected, Congress representatives that were black were elected in Texas. They passed a law that people could not give water to people who come to the advanced, what is the polling places, come to vote or come to get in line for the early elections. They've done a lot of stuff across the country. So there, as much as there are people trying to perpetrate this black against white or north against south, there are people working for harmony and working to organize people around the principles that the country says it's for. So I think that's the hope, that there are people waking up and seeing, you know, perpetrating hate, perpetrating one race against the other, one gender against the other. It's not helping us. So there are some people working against the chaos that exists now. And that's a difference, too, I see with Canada. Canada is honoring and even working to reconciliation, those 92 acts of reconciliation. America doesn't have anything organized in place right now around reparations and reconciliation for so much labor and so much that was extracted from people. So I think that this model that we are working toward will be something that maybe people will present, somebody will present one day on the floor of Congress and say, look at what Canada is doing. We need to do something similar. Then Juneteenth will be a real celebration. But thank you for sharing that, Neil, because it is an important thing that it's now a federal holiday and people can get paid if they have to work on that day. In so many cities, people had programs, all the musicians, YouTube, so many people came out to celebrate and share their talent, share their poetry, their dances, everything. So thank you so much for sharing that. Tell us again, in case anyone wants to look it up, who the essay was by and what your source?
I'll be right there with your answer. Her name is, I wish I could tell you what university. Her name is Heather Cox Richardson, and it's from Letters from an American.
Okay.
Heather Cox Richardson at Substack.com.
Okay, that way our listeners can look it up and listen to it themselves and have it to share.
Some people really need it. Listen to me, y'all. Do time. can't even walk the streets, because I never know when the world they're gonna meet. For that me, oh me, me, green, almighty dollar, money, drink. People will lie, lies they will cheat. People don't care who they heard of me. A woman will sell her precious body for a small piece of paper. It carries a lot of weight. For that me, 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 green, almighty dollar. Talking about.
Changing up your mind.
We just had the summer solstice, and I had an interesting discussion with someone about it, which led into thinking about, you know, how our memories have changed. The things that we remember are cherished as a child during these longer summer days versus teen, and then now in these years. Lester, what were your thoughts about that?
When I thought about my memories as a child, I remember that, you know, I had a very strict routine as a child. You know, I went to bed at the same time every night. And the further north you are, of course, the longer the evenings get. So, you know, living at a fairly northern latitude, it was light probably till about 10 o'clock at night. And I remember laying in bed in broad daylight, unable to sleep. And it seemed very unjust to me that I was in bed. But there's a lovely poem that I remembered from my childhood that I found online. It's called Bed in Summer by Robert Louis Stevenson. So I'd just like to read that. In winter, I get up at night and dress by yellow candlelight. In summer, quite the other way, I have to go to bed by day. I have to go to bed and see the birds still hopping on the tree, or hear the grown-up people's feet still going past me in the street. And does it not seem hard to you when all the sky is clear and blue, and I should like so much to play, to have to go to bed by day? So that perfectly captured my thoughts at the time. I felt it was so unjust. So that's my childhood memory of the summer solstice. As a teenager, I don't know, long family walks, we were able to go out after dinner. So, you know, the evenings were long and lovely. So long family walks after dinner. And my favorite part of summer now, it's not really the solstice, but when you get to August and you have those long August nights and they're so warm and you can actually go outside. I mean, this is not anything unusual for people that live in more southerly latitudes, but to be able to go out and sit outside at 9 o'clock at night, just in summer clothes, feeling the warmth, listening to the insects buzz. So when the summer solstice arrives, I kind of start looking forward to that time. As an adult, I cherish, you know, I have more energy when there's more daylight, and I seem to spend, you know, more time doing things. You know, I can go out and work in the garden after dinner, you know, so I treasure those long summer evenings. So that's what I find the summer solstice is to me. It's more energy. It's more time outdoors. It contrasts for me with different parts of the world. And I mentioned that, of course, the further north you go, the longer the evenings are in the summer. As you head towards the equator, it's completely the reverse. And I remember being in Indonesia and how disappointingly predictable it was. The sun rose at 6 a.m. and it set at 6 p.m. every single day. All year round. Wow. The temperature was, you know, it hovered around 80 degrees all the time. There was just no change. So there was no contrast. So I think part of the joy in the summer solstice is the contrast with the darkness of winter. And again, at northern latitudes, you're getting dark. You know, where I lived as a child, it was dark at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Really?
Yeah.